after one whole quart of brandy, like a daisy I'm awake. With no Broma seltzer handy, I don't even shake. Men are not a new sensation, I've done pretty well.
Civic Media Radio Network. But don't forget, you can always download our app, listen crystal clear, and with just one touch, call or text the show. But you can do it the old-fashioned way, 844-967-2789. Yes, we're going to be talking about the fact that it's going to be the 4th of July weekend here, which I think is only apt from a timing perspective. So, happy 4th of July to everyone, and a little programming note. As you have come to know, I don't have shows on Friday. You will hear a repeat. And I am taking Monday and Tuesday off. So I will be back with you all next Wednesday. So please have a safe, happy, and healthy 4th of July. So here we are coming up on this holiday where we celebrate our nation's independence. By the way, it's kind of an arbitrary date. I mean, that's... history is an interesting beast, isn't it? And that is the point of the show today. That history is a matter of perspective. And that conservatives have been peddling this cynical conceit of constitutionalism or the tautology of strict textualism for far too long. And these two decisions this year, the Dobbs decision about a woman's right to control her body, and the affirmative action decision that dropped today, both reflect two of the most perverse views of history that the Supreme Court has ever adopted. It takes, respectively, not just a myopic view of history in the Dobbs decision, but a self-perpetuating one, one that ties our future to only what our past was. And in the affirmative action decision today, belies history, denies its reality, denies that history matters as we stand here today. These two perversions of history dressed up in each instance in very fancy language about the Constitution should be deeply disturbing to each one of us as we approach this celebration of our nation's independence, because that celebration can only be a celebration if we are engaged in a maturation of this democracy, a movement forward with an idea that equality won't just be conceptual, that we will commit to its realization, that freedom of choice in our most intimate senses of ourselves will be respected. In my opinion, the Supreme Court of the United States, as dominated by a 6-seat conservative majority, has zero legitimacy. It deserves not an ounce of deference, because those that occupy those 6 seats engage in this perversion of history every time they issue a decision. When one places yourself in a seat of arbiter, you take on a certain responsibility. And we can talk about their ethical lapses, of which there are many now very well documented. And those are problematic enough. But I would suggest to you that what we are seeing in these two decisions from this court is much, much more dangerous than individual justices succumbing to the bribery of the oligarchy that we have created in these United States, to the influence peddling of the wealthy, the technocratic excusing of such craven behavior. These two decisions, Dobbs first, myopic and tautological, guaranteeing that our future is only our past and dooming us to repeat it. And the decision today on affirmative action, a fulsome denial that we stand here today in a position that is the product of our history. I don't know how any of those folks at their root don't have some kind of cognitive dissonance. It just makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me. The fallacy of the logic and the denial of the reality, respectively, in each of those decisions blows my mind. So let me start. And I feel like I have to start with Dobbs because it is this first indicator that the lengths to which these justices will be pretzeled to engage in mythical culture wars when our common shared democratic experiment in equality suffers because we are being led down this primrose path of hypocritical notions of fairness, where up is down, and left is right, where parental freedoms are important in one area but not another, where a cake maker doesn't have to make a cake but a woman has to make a baby, and where to pursue equality, to undo generations of oppression and racism, the answer is to not address race. And by doing so, by not addressing race, what does that do? What is the effect of that? The effect of that is to preference the status quo ante, the way things existed before, the white way that things existed before. That is what the denial of the reality of history showing up in today means. And that works plenty well for you, legacy admission, Brett Kavanaugh. Shame, sir. So I struggled all day with how to even start talking about these things. Because the threat is so real. The veneer that judges are able to apply to themselves, the thin veneer of intellectualism and theoretical consistency in words like textualism and constitutionalism, all they are, everyone, with all the pages and pages of fancy words and turns of phrases, all it is in each of these decisions, all it is the thing that inexorably leads us to only be what we once were. Not the best ideals that we are still trying to become, but condemning us to a version of democracy in our culture where only one group of people had any power. And they certainly didn't look like me. They weren't the middle class. They weren't black and brown folks. They weren't LGBT. They are returning us to a version of the world by preferencing the status quo ante and preferencing the way the world was back in 1776 so that it privileges white men. Because when we can't talk about race, when we can't talk about the way that a woman's life is impacted when her right to control whether or not she will have a child is impaired, if we can't talk about reality, then what is the law? I don't mean to be that existential about it, but if the law has now become so divorced from reality where justices can say, well, this isn't about gender. This isn't an equal protection issue. This isn't discriminating. Sure is, because women are the only people that can have kids. And then today to say, well, we just won't worry ourselves with the realities of the disparate outcomes we see in nearly every measure of the quality and wellness in our lives, disparate outcomes because of years of governmental racist policies. The government, the institutions of power in this country treated white and black people differently. How do you make an argument today that we're not going to see differences in outcomes for white and black people when our country, our justice system, the very court that now deigns to say that we achieve equality by ignoring race, that was the very institution that perpetuated these systems of oppression. And while the decision today takes pains to disavow those stains on our history, it does nothing to redress them or even accept the reality that they matter today. The insult isn't to say that race matters in our country. The insult, my friends, is to deny it. Because to deny it flies in the face of the lived, breathed, and everyday lived experiences of black and brown folks, of women, of anyone who wasn't one of the ones who benefited from all of those institutions and structures. I'm not going to read anything today from Justice Roberts' drivel in the majority opinion. The only thing I'm going to be reading from today is Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's dissent. And her dissent doesn't actually get into the actual legal arguments. Her dissent is only about why it matters. It is 30 pages that I hope every student in this country reads. It is 30 pages that every voter needs to read. To every white person that says that they don't see color and that colorblind is the point, they need to read those 30 pages. Because she mic dropped everyone, she has put our country and her fellow justices on blast because they have the audacity to suggest that history doesn't have an impact on where we all stand today. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show. 844-967-2789. You got a question? I probably have an answer for it today. Give us a call. We'll be here on the Civic Media Radio Network. That cling to him, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered, am I? When he talks, 92.7 WMDX.
Funny how I finally flipped the script on ya. When you the one who's double dipping, yeah. You so sloppy how I caught you slipping, You're off the lease. Run me my keys. No more popping up the hitty, yeah. I ain't even got the miles to trip on ya. No phone.
Who is this? Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. It is a Thursday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show on a pretty dark day for us here in America. If we want to actually live with our feet firmly planted here in reality. Before we went to break, what I was trying to explain was that there's a through line between the Dobbs decision that took a woman's right to control her body away from her and the Students for Fair Admissions Harvard and North Carolina case decision that came down today. It's not just that both of these cases deal with groups of people who didn't have rights in this country when this country began. It's not just that, but boy, does that tell us a lot about the story. It's not just about that. It's about what that means historically and how each of these decisions in their own perverse way want to ignore that history and ignore why that history matters today. I will read briefly. This is from the Dobbs decision. We hold that Roe must be overruled. The Constitution makes no reference to abortion, and no such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision, including the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. That provision has been held to guarantee some rights that are not mentioned in the Constitution, but any such right must be, quote, deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition and implicit in the concept of ordered liberty, end quote. This means that the rights of the historically oppressed will be determined and set by the rights of their oppressors. It means that my rights today must somehow have been central to the Constitution then, when my citizenship, my right to participate in the democracy, wasn't even acknowledged then. It defines rights today based on what we wanted to say our rights were two centuries ago. Does that make any sense? I told you I wasn't going to read from his decision, but I have to, because the parallels here are so sickeningly clear when it's distilled down to its basest from today's decision. The dissenters would instead uphold the university's admissions programs based on their view that the 14th Amendment, it's the equal protection one, permits state actors to remedy the effects of societal discrimination through explicitly race-based measures. Yeah, that would seem to me to be the point now, wouldn't it? Although both opinions are thorough and thoughtful in many respects, this court has long rejected their core thesis. The dissent's interpretation of the Equal Protection Clause is not new. In Bakke, that was the case that originated and said that you could have affirmative action. In Bakke, four justices would have permitted race-based admissions programs to remedy the effects of societal discrimination. But that minority view is just that, a minority view. Justice Powell, who provided the fifth vote and controlling opinion in Bakke, firmly rejected the notion that societal discrimination constituted a compelling government interest, calling such an amorphous concept of injury that may be ageless in its reach into the past and justify an impermissible racial classification that imposes disadvantages upon persons who bear no responsibility for whatever harm the beneficiaries of the race-based admissions programs are thought to have suffered. In other words, we don't care that folks ain't on equal footing here because we created a legal and constitutional system of oppression that still has not been completely justified, because we created a fiction of equal under the law, but not until, you know, 50 years ago. That's all I'm going to read from it, because I think it's pretty clear. To torture the Constitution into these things that sort of go against our common sense, right? You have to be in the business of denying history. There's no other way to do it. By the way, speaking of Dobbs, yesterday, all 22 Wisconsin senators, state senators, declined to restore the right to control our bodies to women. All 22 of them, not a single one, all voted to keep the state's 1849 abortion ban in place. Hey, you know when women got the right to vote? Yeah, not then. Not in 1849, not in 1850s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, not in 1900, not in 1910. Yeah, it was like 1919 was when Wyoming did it. Yeah. All 22 of them. So what do I want to share with you today? I want to share with you today some of Justice Kent- Ketanji Brown Jackson's words, because I think they will inspire us. And I am going to leave us on a positive note, because aside from the depressing Supreme Court, there have been some incredibly promising decisions coming out of federal lower courts. And I want to share those with you. Stay tuned if you want to win some Brewers tickets. Keep it locked in. We're going to do that in the last block of the day. 844-967-2789. Get your calls queued up if you want them tickets. The tickets are for July 4th, 7:10 game against our I-94 rivals, those dastardly Chicago Cubs. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Lock it in, everybody.
So don't forget to come and pick up your
at Ula Eyewear, Hilldale.
I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. If you'd like to join the conversation, 844-967-2789, but I need to jump right in and share with you some of what Justice Jackson had to say today. Gulf-sized race-based gaps exist with respect to health, wealth, and well-being of American citizens. They were created in the distant past, but have indisputably been passed down to the present day through generations. Every moment these gaps persist is a moment in which this great country falls short of actualizing one of its foundational principles, the self-evident truth that all of us are created equal. Yet today, this court determines that holistic admissions programs are a problem with respect to achievement of that aspiration rather than a viable solution, as has long been evident to historians, sociologists, and policymakers alike. I write to separately expound upon the universal benefits of considering race in this context in response to a suggestion that has permeated this legal action from the start. Students for Fair Admissions has maintained, both subtly and overtly, that it is unfair for a college's admissions process to consider race as one factor in a holistic review of its applicants. But this contention blinks both history and reality in ways too numerous to count. The response is simple. Our country has never been colorblind. Given the lengthy history of state-sponsored, race-based preferences in America, to say that anyone now is victimized if a college considers whether that legacy of discrimination has unequally advantaged its applicants fails to acknowledge the well-documented intergenerational transmission of inequality that still plagues our citizenry. It is that inequality that admissions programs such as UNC's and Harvard's help to address to the benefit of us all. Because the majority's judgment stunts that progress without any basis in law, history, logic, or justice, I dissent. She then turns and spends pages recounting really important baseline concepts of American history that I would like to suggest probably aren't being taught in some states now because they're run like people like Ron DeSantis. Because it might be critical race theory to understand our history, including its most ugly and vile parts. She begins, "Many chapters of America's history appear necessary given the opinions that my colleagues in the majority have issued in this case." She basically just called them a bunch of idiots. That's what that means. Mark, I will get to you in just one sec. She continued, Justice Thurgood Marshall recounted the genesis. Quote, 350 years ago, the Negro was dragged to this country in chains to be sold into slavery, uprooted from his homeland and thrust into bondage for forced labor. The slave was deprived of all legal rights. It was unlawful to teach him to read. He could be sold away from his family and friends at the whim of his master, and killing or maiming him was not a crime. The system of slavery brutalized and dehumanized both master and slave. Slavery should have been and was to many self-evidently dissonant with our avowed founding principles. When the time came to resolve that dissonance, 11 states chose slavery. With the Union's survival at stake, Frederick Douglass noted Black Americans in the South were almost the only reliable friends the nation had. And but for their help, the rebels might have succeeded in breaking up the Union. After the war, Senator John Sherman defended the proposed 14th Amendment in a manner that encapsulated our Reconstruction framers' highest sentiments. Quote, we are bound by every obligation, by Black Americans' service on the battlefield, by their heroes who are buried in our cause, by their patriotism. In the hours that tried our country, we are bound to protect them and all their natural rights. To uphold that promise, the framers repudiated this Supreme Court's holding in Dred Scott by crafting Reconstruction amendments and associated legislation that transformed our Constitution and society. Even after the second founding, when the need to right historical wrongs should have been clear beyond cavil, opponents insisted that vindicating equality in this manner slighted white Americans. So when the Reconstruction Congress passed a bill to secure all citizens the same civil rights as enjoyed by white citizens, President Andrew Johnson vetoed it because it, quote, discriminated in favor of the Negro, end quote. That attitude in the nation's associated retreat from Reconstruction made prophecy out of Congressman Thaddeus Stevens' fear that, quote, those states will all keep up middle class, all keep up this discrimination and crush to death the hated freedmen. And this court facilitated that retrenchment. She goes on, not just in Plessy versus Ferguson, but in almost every instant, this Supreme Court chose to restrict the scope of the second founding. Thus, 13 years pre-Plessy, in the civil rights cases in 1883, our predecessors on this court invalidated Congress's attempt to enforce the Reconstruction amendments via the Civil Rights Act, lecturing that, quote, there must be some stage when Black Americans take the rank of mere citizen and cease to be a special favorite of the laws, end quote. Justice Harlan knew better. He responded, what the nation through Congress has sought to accomplish in reference to Black people is what had already been done in every state of the Union for the white race, to secure and protect rights belonging to them as freemen and citizens, nothing more. She goes on and on and on. She talks about redlining. She talks about the benefits given veterans, about locking Black Americans who worked mostly in housekeeping and nanny roles out of any of the New Deal. How sharecropping and Jim Crow worked. She goes through all of it. And it's not all of it. It would take libraries to write all of it. She concludes and says this. The upshot of all of this is that due to government policy choices, in the suburban shaping years between 1930 and 1960, fewer than 1% of all mortgages in the nation were issued to African Americans. Thus, based on their race, Black people were locked out of the greatest mass-based opportunity for wealth accumulation in American history. For present purposes, it is significant that in so excluding Black people, government policies affirmatively operated, one could say affirmatively acted, to dole out preferences to those who, if nothing else, were not Black. Those past preferences carried forward and are reinforced today by the benefits that flow to homeowners and the holders of other forms of capital that are hard to obtain unless one already has assets. The discussion of how the existing gaps were formed is merely illustrative, not exhaustive. I will pass over Congress's repeated crafting of family, worker, retiree protective legislation to channel benefits exclusively to white people, thereby excluding Black Americans from what was otherwise a revolution in the status of most working Americans. This is the point. Preferencing whom? Compared to what? The status quo ante is that does preference the white over the Black folks. This is what she's saying. So in the breath that you espouse equality by denying the importance of race today, you serve to further entrench the inequality. You set our nation's experiment back. That is why I began by making clear that what these decisions do is doom us to a future that is limited by our past. Have we learned nothing? The point is this. Given our history, the origin of persistent race-linked gaps should be no mystery. It has never been a deficiency of Black Americans' desire or ability to, in Frederick Douglass's words, stand on their own legs. Rather, it was always simply what Justice Harlan recognized 140 years ago, the persistent and pernicious denial of what had already been done in every state of the Union for the white race. History speaks. In some form, it can be heard forever. The race-based gaps that first developed centuries ago are echoes from the past that still exist today. And by all accounts, they are stark. Justice Jackson then confronts this pervasive, sticky American mythology of meritocracy, as if those who have succeed entirely on their own merits, as if whiteness isn't a privilege that confers benefits every day. To demand that colleges ignore race in today's admissions practices and thus disregard the fact that racial disparities may have mattered for where some applicants find themselves today is not only an affront to the dignity of those students for whom race matters, it also condemns our society to never escape the past that explains how and why race matters to the very concept of who merits admission. Permitting, not requiring, colleges like Harvard and UNC to assess merit fully without blinders on plainly advances, not thwarts, the 14th Amendment's core promise. UNC considers race as one of many factors in order to best assess the entire unique import of candidates' individual lives and inheritances on an equal basis. Doing so involves acknowledging, not ignoring, the 7 generations worth of historical privileges and disadvantages that otherwise similar candidates were born with. I mean, it's plainly worded too. Just comparing, reading the way that the majority opinion is worded versus what Justice Jackson is saying is revelatory in itself. What she says tracks human experience. Even if you don't like where it leads us, it tracks human experience. Every trial lawyer says to a jury, because we're the jury here, we're the ones adjudging the legitimacy of these decisions. Every trial lawyer will say to a jury, use your common sense, use your intuition, use your experience to inform your judgment here. My client's story will make sense to you. it will comport with your reality. What Justice Jackson is saying comports with reality. Just a little bit more before we go to break. If you'd like to get your hands on those tickets, you just hang on through this break and we will give you a shot to weigh in here. Yeah. The majority seems to think that race blindness solves the problem of race-based disadvantage. But the irony is that requiring colleges to ignore the initial race-linked opportunity gap between applicants will inevitably widen that gap, not narrow it. It will delay the day that every American has an equal opportunity to thrive regardless of race.
Civic Media Network News on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
I guess for now you've got the last laugh.
I'm sorry if I seem uninterested, or I'm not listening, or I'm indifferent. Truly, I ain't got no business here.
Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I just wanted to give you her last sort of crack at it, and then we'll take some of the callers. If I don't get to the great decisions that are coming out of our lower federal courts when it comes to observing and protecting our rights to be our essential selves, I'll talk about them after the fourth break. So here it is. With let them eat cake obliviousness, today the majority pulls the ripcord and announces colorblindness for all by legal fiat. By deeming race irrelevant in law, does not make it so in life. Having so detached itself from this country's actual past and present experiences, the court has now been lured into interfering with the crucial work that UNC, Harvard, and other institutions of higher learning are doing to solve America's real-world problems. No one benefits from ignorance. Although formal race-linked legal barriers are gone, race still matters to the lived experiences of all Americans in innumerable ways. And today's ruling makes things worse, not better. The best that can be said of the majority's perspective is that it proceeds ostrich-like from the hope that preventing consideration of race will end racism. But if that is its motivation, the majority proceeds in vain. If the colleges of this country are required to ignore a thing that matters, it will not just go away. It will take longer for racism to leave us. And ultimately, ignoring race just makes it matter more. We can do better, and we should do better. I was really very, very moved by what she had to say in this opinion, because I think it is a really, really accessible 30 pages of very plainly written, yet eloquent, masterclass in what equity it really is and what we need to be acknowledging. What she presents are facts. And it's interesting that in the majority opinion and all the concurrences, no one takes her up and tries to argue with her about any of those facts. So I say to you, jurors, put your voice behind the story that makes sense to you in your lived experience. And oh, might I say, it is the one that is rooted in deep respect for the individual and that helps lift up the reality that we all matter. If that's your jam, if that's what you like to say, I like to say, we all won't matter until Black Lives Matter. So with that, we'll go to the phones. Is anybody on the line, my friend E?
Sure thing.
Who we got?
First of all, we got Rico from Rock County.
What's up, Rico, my man? Did a little birdie tell me you want to go to the Brewers game with three of your friends and some really sweet tickets on July 4th? Was that you, my friend, Rico?
Me. But I have so much more to say.
Oh, no. You can say whatever you'd like, but you get the tickets, my brother. Evan will get your exact
Thank
info
you.
And tell you
Thank
how to get
you,
those
Maggie.
When we get done.
Thank you, Maggie. But I
you
still
bet, man.
Profess loyalty to the Devils. I still got to profess my loyalty to the Devils or I get in trouble, you know. Anyway,
well, now you don't get the tickets.
You know,
don't give them the tickets anymore.
I can't win. A white guy, he didn't catch a break on this show, you know?
Yeah, it's a real bummer right?
Yeah, you know. Hey, I just wanted to say, guys, out there in the listening world, with these latest decisions, you know, these black folks say they just got to work hard and they got to work. Pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, man. Do your own thing. I implore all of you. And if you don't want to listen to me, listen to Tom Hanks. Just take a little moment of your life and go watch any good documentary on Tulsa. They did try that. And you can see the results then. Just judge for yourselves. That's all I got to say. Love everything you do, Maggie.
Thanks much, man. Enjoy those tickets. Evan, don't
thanks for the tickets. My grandson thanks you.
That's awesome. I'm so glad. Glad to hear that. Anybody else on the line still?
Yeah, we've got Mark from the SAC.
Hey, Mark. What's up? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. And I couldn't help but remember that something I saw on reading Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention from Gouverneur Morris, who more or less condemned slavery back at the Constitutional Convention, actually said that that the inhabitants of Georgia and South Carolina who go through the coast of Africa and in defiance of the most sacred laws of humanity tears away his fellow creatures from their dearest connections and damns them to the most cruel of bondages. I mean, even at the Constitutional Convention, there was men here in America who knew that slavery was an evil and the prejudice was evil. And for men today, and one woman, I guess, to say that they think that, there's no more racism in this country, no longer exists, and if there is, the government has no business in doing anything about it because, I say BS on that, because the only way that we are going to achieve something is with governmental intervention. I mean, that's the only way we protect our rights in the first place. That's one of the reasons government was created, to prepare to
protect, yes.
To establish the rights among men. I mean, that otherwise, that it is just...
It's Lord of the Flies, man. Place. We got to do better. Thanks for the call, Mark. I really appreciate it. I wanted to be sure we just had a moment for these facts. So we began the show by talking about how both of these decisions, Dobbs and then the Harvard and NC decisions today, are both perversions of history and represent tortured logic beyond all recognition. That these represent the cynical conceit of constitutionalism, or what I also like to call the tautology of textualism, that everything has to be defined by what the rights were back then. So I just thought we could take a moment and observe who decided whose rights were what. There have been 116 Supreme Court justices in our nation's history. Four of them have been not white people. Six of them have been women. That's 3.4% and 5.2%. We've had a big zip in 0% LGBTQIA Supreme Court justices. So yeah, those that make the rules get the gold, don't they? I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for keeping it locked in. I'll be back with you after the 4th. Everybody stay safe out there.
When they're ready, that I'm ready, and I'm standing by the TV with my beanie low. Yo, I'll be over here. Oh.